Hello, everyone, and welcome to The People Behind Your Food. It is 1:33 p.m. Central Standard Time on Tuesday, and I am here with my fabulous friend, Jeff Buck, who I have known for many, many years, and he is also a restaurant industry veteran, and right now he is working in the pizza business. I know we had someone earlier, so as the driver's side, so he's a general manager, so we'll go ahead and explore from that side. And so, hey, Jeff, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. It's nice and cold and rainy here. It keeps on off snowing. I don't know how that weather in Denver is.
It's actually pretty nice today. We're probably sitting about 45 degrees.
Well, you're just rude.
Loving it.
So let's just get straight into it. Time is of the essence. So let's get to know you as a person, and let's establish your personality from the very beginning. Okay, so ready? You ready for these questions?
Let's go.
Okay, so what's your favorite movie?
It's a tough one. Tend to stick towards comedy, somewhere in the Slapshot Anchorman range.
Okay. Favorite TV show?
Another tough one. Gotta throw The Simpsons a lot of love, though. Simpsons, Futurama, anything Matt Groening.
Okay. What about your favorite music?
Big punk rock. Okay. Punk rock all day, every day.
Okay, are you a cash guy, or are you paying with cards, like credit cards, debit cards? You carry a big wad of cash around.
Personally, I'm pretty impartial. Tends to be whatever I have on me. As you said, you know, long-time delivery driver, you always have cash on you. Now more in a management role, and it's like I'm not going to the bank to get the cash if I still got the money on my card. So I'm pretty impartial, personally.
That makes sense to me. All right, favorite type of ice cream?
Gonna have to go Rocky Road.
Rocky Road, that's a good choice. What's your favorite food in general?
As a general basis standpoint, probably just have to start with potatoes. You can go any direction as soon as you start with something like that. Always love twice baked potatoes, you know, nice and easy.
And then are you a dog person or a cat person?
Grew up with dogs, currently have a cat. Animal person in general. Okay. Honestly, yeah, they're
so
all great.
So you're just a lover?
Well, I'm a big time lover.
And then you live in Denver now, so where did you grow up?
I'm St. Louis boy, born and raised a little bit deeper in St. Louis, moved out to the county as I got older, and, well, that's where we met fatefully.
Yeah, that is exactly how we met. We grew up together, so, you know, we literally lived right down the street from each other for a while there, that which is pretty crazy. So
yeah, that's fun.
Let's jump into your experiences in the restaurant business. So tell me what you do and what you've done in the restaurant business.
Currently, I feel like the answer as far as what I do is the culmination of all of the things that I've done. Starting everywhere from mopping floors, changing trash, all the way up to doing paperwork, everything in between.
Okay, so would you say so you're a general manager right now at a pizza chain, right? Would you call your chain a national chain or a regional chain? How would you explain that?
Oh, it's definitely national.
Definitely national?
It's, yeah.
Okay.
If you don't have it in your town, you will be soon.
And then how long have you been working in the restaurant business?
The restaurant business alone has been, well, my first job was a fast food job. First task I ever completed at that job was cleaning the wall behind the chicken fryer. Age of 16 at a Hardee's.
Yeah, that sounds
so
pleasant.
Let's see, that puts us at 15, 16 years of restaurant experience.
Dang, that's a long time. So tell me why, a lot of people come into the restaurant business and they're like, okay, I'm going to go to college and go do something else. So you've been doing this for 15, 16 years. What got you even involved in this line of work to begin with?
A big thing that I'd say would to getting me involved probably be somewhere along the lines of flexibility and work scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in being a delivery driver, it's really easy when you can make the money that you need to make in the 4 to 6 hour shift as compared to having to be there for 10 hours, 5 hours, 5 days a week. Especially growing up musician, trying to play shows here and there, it was nice and convenient to be working in a restaurant as a delivery driver.
So you really got started in it because, you needed money, you needed cash, but you needed flexibility so you could do other stuff. And being in the restaurant business, allow right. you to do pursue other activities.
Yeah, pursue what I would really have liked to have been doing rather than delivering pizzas.
And then, so you've been doing it for 15, 16 years. I mean, so what are your thoughts? I mean, has it, you know, has it been good to you? Has it been bad to you? You know, let's explore that for a second.
Sure. I feel like with, you know, any profession that you take on, there's going to be times where it feels super rewarding, and then there's going to be times where it feels like no matter what you do, you just can't get somebody to even say thank you to you for the simplest of things. So, you know, it's a tough one. It can be rewarding at the same time and just leave you out high and dry the same way.
I completely, completely understand that, and I think that a lot of people have said something very similar on the show so far. So tell me, what's it like to go from being a delivery driver with basically no responsibilities to being the general manager at a pizza place, which is really just, you know, the lord of the flies? So, like, tell me about what that was like for you.
It's certainly a shock to the system. Even just moving up the ladder slowly, you know, it can be a little difficult. One thing too is having people that you were at once the same level as that you're now progressing in, and they might still be your friends, but now they're your employees as well. That was one of the hardest things to really get a handle of. However, you know, for the most part, if they're trusting that you could move up into that position, you've at least shown some, you know, capabilities and prowess in areas that they think they can utilize. Mm-hmm. And any intelligent employer is going to, you know, do what they have. They're going to play their best card in their hand in order to make their business make more money.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree
so
with that.
It can be a huge shock, but at the end of the day, you know, it's just a learning curve.
Sure.
And, you know, if somebody thinks they should be putting you in that position, it's doable.
So tell me what it was like for you going from being friends versus turning your friends into your employees. Like how was that for you? Was that an easy transition for you? Did people respect you? Or did you find that people, you know, just naturally, did you find that people naturally respected you and just wanted to listen to what you said? Or did you find that it was a little bit of a coaxing and relearning yourself in that relationship?
I feel very fortunate in the fact that I had, you know, when I went through the transition, I had seriously just an A-plus crew, a crew that anybody would be happy to have. And maybe it wouldn't have worked for them the same way as it did for me. However, I didn't have to do any coaxing with my original staff. They were excited for me. They were like all right behind me saying, let's go, we got this. So it was pretty easy for me in that aspect, you know, just given the fact that they were all good people.
That's good.
I also, yeah, was very fortunate in my first year and a half of being the general manager. I held a 12% turnover rating, which for the food industry is pretty absurd.
That's super, super low.
So, yeah, that's another thing that when I say I had a good crew, you know, they were right there the entire time. There was no difficulty getting anybody to do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Problems came in, I feel, when new people would come in and the old people were still there to say, like, no, he's a good guy. And it's like, well, that doesn't mean you don't need to listen to me. So
I'm still your boss.
Yeah. Come on. Well, take it easy, but we still have stuff to do.
Okay, so let's explore that position as the general manager a little bit more. So tell me some of the unique challenges as a general manager of a pizza place. Like what did you find, you know, what was extremely challenging for you? If you just had to say top two, top three.
The hardest thing, in my opinion, is always getting the labor on the written schedule proper. That alone, it's just difficult to tell, especially at a pizza place, when you don't know, are we going to be busy for the Oscars this year?
Mm-hmm.
Some years you might be, some years it's, you know, nothing. I've even seen the Super Bowl go the same way.
Mm-hmm.
What was that, the Super Bowl in 2013 or 14, the Broncos played the Seahawks. As soon as the Seahawks scored the first time, being Broncos territory out here, we had no business for the rest of the day. But I had a staff of 18 people there. And it's like, well, we just screwed the whole thing right there. So that was always kind of a that was a hard thing for me getting down, because and another aspect is you got all these good people, you're trying to get them the hours that are close to what they need so that they keep their job. Because mm-hmm. I mean, that's another thing that I'll get to is hiring. But it's, you know, you want to keep the people that you have that are good and get them their right hours, but you have to fit it all in a certain way that, you know, keeps it in the business lines. And you're, you know, labor is one of the big things that you actually have control of as far as profitability.
Right, right.
So that was a very difficult thing for me. Like I was saying, another thing that I had issues with was hiring. And that is just difficult based on, you know, I feel a lot of people going into, you know, make a pizza, they look at it as a fast food job.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. This isn't meant to be a career for everybody. But it gets kind of difficult when, you know, these kids come in thinking, well, there is no interview, I don't really need to prepare for anything. And then it just becomes hard to figure out who you can trust until you spend some time with them, I feel. And hiring people on as managers is one of the most difficult things that I've ever been asked to do.
I'm going to be honest, I think that's a very interesting perspective, and I want to kind of explore this a little bit more. So tell me about, okay, so you talked about kids and how, you know, they just don't respect what you're doing, right? It is a job, right? I understand it. Like, a lot of times people don't see it as a career, but for a lot of people, the restaurant industry is a career and is a valid career choice.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about your hiring problems. Like, was it, you know, like here in St. Louis, one of the biggest problems isn't that people can't hire, or, you know, like there's not people showing up for work. It's that there's just not enough people willing to work in the restaurant business right now to support the actual restaurant business in St. Louis. Is that the same problem you guys have out in Denver, or do you guys have a different problem?
Well, especially, you know, I'm just a bit outside of Denver. It's a pretty affluent suburb, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the issue is finding people that, you know, want the 32 plus hours a week that are not high school kids.
Okay, if
that makes sense.
Sure.
Because, you know, I mean, it's going to a job that's paying slightly more than minimum in an area where the average house is, you know, $400,000. It's pretty difficult to find the right kind of people.
So you're trying to find people who can commute in.
Correct.
Okay. So do you think that is an issue that could be overcome by paying a higher wage, or do you think that's just, there's like almost like a boundary, like, hey, we just don't want to work in this area because it's a more affluent area?
Well, I honestly think that, you know, working for a higher wage specifically for those people that are available for like that time slot that you need. I mean, because I can, you know, I can fill up even my busiest of Friday nights with high school kids and college students that are delivery driving. You know, high school kids making the pizzas inside, college students delivering it. They're all happy. They're all out of there by, you know, 11 o'clock, still have time to go party. And, you know, that's fine. The problem being is the morning until you get to that point. And in my experience, you know, a successful, you know, pizza company is going, the easiest way to boost your sales is to have big orders for the morning. You know it's coming up, you know, the night before. You can prepare for it the night before. It's nice and easy, but you still need people in the store. You literally can't do that as a one-man show. You can't put pizzas in the oven and have them coming out and cut them at the same time.
No, you can't.
Anybody who's worked in a, you know, pizza restaurant that has a conveyor oven understands that.
No, and if you don't have a conveyor oven and you have the brick oven, you have to have somebody literally physically load them and then physically remove them at the same time.
Don't forget about turning them and checking on them throughout. I mean, that takes even more people. So
that's a hot mess there.
But I've always felt that having, you know, go-to people that could come in and help with those kinds of things and then help bust out prep for the rest of the day, those kinds of people should be able to make more.
Mm-hmm.
And even without a management role, in my opinion.
I think that seems sensible, especially if you're having trouble and difficulty finding people. You know, at that point, you almost,
right.
like, if you're like, oh, we just can't even staff this time block, it almost seems like, well, why even be open for this time block? You know, if you can't even get people there but because you're not willing to pay people to be there, then what's the point of even doing business at that time? So let's talk about how big your staff was at the time, how big your staff is at your store.
About 18.
About 18 people?
Including all, you know, management, staff, everybody.
Sure. Okay, so, and you said that basically one of your biggest difficulties was finding the right amount of hours to give to everybody and being fair and giving people the work they needed. Did you find that having that 18 was just a good number, or did you find that that's just kind of where you guys ended up settling out at?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both, honestly.
Okay.
Because, like I said, with you know, a lot of college students, there's going to be times where they're going to a concert or, you know, going to the school football game, something along those lines. You know, who knows what it is. But they wind up asking for a lot of time off.
Okay.
I probably could have gotten away with a considerable amount less. However, it would have been only, you know, if everybody was looking for a set schedule, if you know, something like that.
And then, like you said, turnover at your store wasn't very bad. I found personally that a lot of times people will do a hiring strategy where you're actually over-hiring all the time because you know that people are going to just drop off.
And
So was that something you had to like think about, or is that just pretty much like a given that, like, you know, I'm going to lose 10% of my employees every year, or how did you handle that?
So honestly, I kind of just – I stopped doing that. They were doing that before. They hate me for admitting that, but hey. So, you know, I was actually handed the operation right after they had nonsensically hired on 4 additional people that I'm now trying to find 30 hours for each.
Sure.
And that's probably, you know, where my whole dislike of labor comes from is week one. I gotta get under these numbers, but I gotta make these 4 people I don't even know's names yet happy. and you know, I didn't know their names for no other reason than they got hired 2 days before I had to make a schedule for them.
Sure.
So I physically didn't know them yet.
That seems like a good reason to be like, but, oh, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. You know me well enough to know that that's not my style. So I kind of stopped doing that, though, because for me, a big part of it, I'm not a liar. I just don't like telling people that I can do something for them and then turn around and be like, cool, I got a warm body in the door. Now let's just go ahead and drive them back out.
Right.
I'd just rather not do that. It's a waste of my time and energy, the same as it is for them.
You know? That's actually a really good way of looking at that. So I feel like we've really covered who you are. You know, we know what kind of movies you like. We know what kind of TV shows we like. And we now know about your experience in the restaurant business, which is pretty varied and actually pretty cool. So let's dive into part 2 of The People Behind Your Food, the investigative journalism part. Why what you do is important. And notice I use my, like, announcer voice when I do that. So at your business, what exactly does a general manager do?
You name it, everything. Goes from operations of being the only person in a store to helping have a crew and kind of quarterbacking the whole situation, telling everybody what to be doing, where to be, when to be doing it, that whole lot. And, you know, it also comes along with a little bit of paperwork. We got some payroll things to do. Obviously, I said scheduling. Mm-hmm. It also turns into the literal dirty work at times as well. It was probably about 4 or 5 months ago now, I learned what a grease trap was the hard way. So,
would you like to explain to our non-restaurant industry listeners exactly what a grease trap is and why it needs to be serviced?
It needs to be serviced. This cannot be stressed enough. A grease trap, to sum it up, is what every single drain in your restaurant is going to flow through before it goes out. This includes anything that goes into any of the sinks, toilets, and also drains on the floor. And as you can guess by the name, grease trap, any of the grease that, you know, you guys wash off of the floor with degreaser and push into those drains on the floor, that's all going in there. And when one stops working properly, it starts backing up. And, you'll find out that grease traps are about 3 feet deep. Does that sound about right?
Yep, that's about right.
About 3 feet? In my experience, the grease trap was not properly secured to the floor, which is a big no-no in the first place. And it wasn't draining, so I had to do was lift up this piece of steel and look into it, and it was just like, this thing's messed up. There's no figuring this out. Then upon looking at it a little bit longer, this is where this situation becomes abnormal in and of itself. I found 4 of the plastic crates that say like Pepsi bottles come in.
Mm-hmm.
I found 4 of those inside of the grease trap that were supporting the improperly sealed lid. Okay, there was nothing supporting the lid. It was being held up by plastic that was sitting in water and had been for years.
And then how old is this restaurant? Is this like a newer restaurant? Is this like 50 years old? Or
this is, I don't know how long exactly the location's been there, but I'd say somewhere in the 10 to 12 years range.
Okay, so not exactly old enough to like be like, oh, this is an ancient construction method kind of
correct,
thing.
Correct. Yeah, as soon as I called the plumber, he knew exactly what was going on, and I was very happy. But up until that point, have you ever cleaned out the drains underneath a soda machine that haven't been cleaned in a while?
Oh, yeah, they're nasty.
They're nasty. Well, that was what was these Pepsi crates. They were covered in that stuff.
Oh, that's disgusting. So what does a general manager do? He cleans grease traps. And you don't get paid
else doing it.
And I bet you don't get paid as well as the plumber to do it either.
Oh no, of course not.
So speaking of that, as a general manager, how are you compensated? Is it hourly? Is it salary? Is there a bonus structure? Tell me about that.
It's salaried. Just standard 50-hour week. I've experienced a bonus structure. I've also experienced a bonus structure going away. That depends company to company, I guess. But
okay.
In my experience, much better with the bonus structure. it gives you incentives to keep moving.
Well, yeah, and more money is better money.
Right. But yeah, I mean, as far as the whole, salary for 50 is concerned, you're lucky to work 50 hours, in my experience. If you're not at the store, there's, emails to be answered and all that kind of stuff. My experience, we also have a general manager thread where every general manager in the Denver area and all of our, just one higher ups have a text message thread. And that thing starts going off at about 7 in the morning and doesn't stop until about 2 in the morning.
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, so let's talk about that, you know, work-life balance, which is never a word anyone ever uses in the restaurant industry. But, right. I mean, how does that affect you on, like, your days off? I mean, like, this is time that you need to be away from the restaurant to get your bearings back. How does being in constant communication, how does that affect you mentally when you're just trying to relax? Is it constantly stressing you out, or how does that work?
Some days it doesn't bother me at all. However, most of the time, on a day off, I mean, you know, some days on days off, I don't care at all. But most of the time, it's just kind of like, really? Leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, like you said, it's time to get away from that. If, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, you do your 50 hours a week and 5-10 hour days, if you're still going to be reading text messages for 3-4 hours, well, you know, it's go to the aquarium or something like that and walking around and get out of the aquarium. And it's like 30 missed text messages. Now I got to read through these and, sure. You know.
And I actually know all about that. So it's stressful. Yeah. It is. It's really, yeah. It's really stressful. Like, you know, have you ever on your days off had an emergency come up from the store itself?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I actually wound up having to take one of my shift leads to urgent care. He thought he needed stitches. I told him he'd be fine with super glue. And,
he didn't believe you, did he?
Urgent care gave him super glue. but I physically drove him to urgent care, you know?
Yeah.
And, he just calls me and he's like, "Hey, I'm bleeding." It's like, "I'm on my way." You know, and it's at that point in time, you don't really think about it because, like I said, you know, I mean, they were good people, so it's not like it was hard for me to care about them. And, you know, it wasn't like, "Oh man, now I got to go drive for, you know, half an hour just so I can take somebody somewhere else and sit around and wait." Like, I wasn't thinking about that.
Sure.
You know,
you're thinking about your employee.
Right. It was my buddy, you know, got to take care of him.
So, okay, let's talk about employees for a second here. So let's talk about delivery drivers. How important, and for those of who have been listening to the show, they'll know that we had a delivery driver on 2 weeks ago. And, you know, he basically talked about what he does and, you know, the importance of what he does. And how important are delivery drivers to your business model, you know, to the delivery takeout pizza place?
Yeah, so delivery drivers, seriously, just the backbone of the business. Without them, everything's going to fall apart. Honestly, if you can find a delivery driver that can help inside with you, you know, be it making food, bagging stuff up, somebody who's better than just standing around waiting for their food, getting in their car and leaving, they're going to be one of the best employees that you've got.
Okay. So speaking of delivery drivers, from a general manager's perspective, we had, you know, discussed previously how different positions, just like we talked about yours, are compensated. How do you feel about the method in which delivery drivers are compensated? You know, they bring their own cars, they're paid tips, you know, they work for maybe a small hourly. Do you think that's a fair way to compensate them? Do you feel like, you know, from your experience as a delivery driver and as a general manager, do you think that's fair, or do you think there should be more of like a structured way that people get paid to do that job?
Actually, the company that I'm currently at, I feel, does it very well. Because they offer a split wage. When you're on the road, you make the tipped minimum wage, which is still pretty good number out here in Colorado right now. And then when you're in the shop, so as soon as you end your run on the computer and you say, "I'm back in the store," you're making inside minimum wage as well. So okay. I feel that compensation alone makes up for the slower days.
Okay.
And then as far as, you know, it's pretty standard for companies to give, you know, $1 per delivery or, you know, whatever the method is. I've seen percentages on the subtotal. I've seen money per delivery. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a bunch of different things. That is one of those that's kind of a luck of the draw kind of thing, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. you're going to have times where it's this delivery is 7 miles each way. and then that $1, you know, I mean, did it pay for the gas? As long as you're not driving a Suburban? Yeah, probably. But you know, I mean, that's kind of hit or miss. You're going to have times where you drive literally across the street, and that's going to make up for the time that you go 5 to 7 miles in one direction.
So do you think that I'm just going to kind of move to where we're obviously going with this is, you know, do you think that delivery companies should be kind of like UPS or the post office providing standardized delivery vehicles that they just take care of themselves? Or do you feel like, you know, these people come into this job understanding what it is and that it's not really a big deal?
I've seen both aspects of it. I've seen the people that come in and that are only looking for the 12 hours a week that are asking about company vehicles. and then I've seen, you know, the 40-hour guy, you know, not worry about it.
Sure.
And I know for myself, I didn't really think about it. I mean, you know, you get a little bit more maintenance to deal with on the car.
Sure.
And hopefully that maintenance is all you got to deal with. But, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's. But it is what it is. And I feel it's part of it going into it. I don't know. It's the same thing with like the rising of things like Uber, DoorDash, mm-hmm. Anything like that. It kind of shows that people are willing to use their own cars. And as, you know, an employer, you feel like there would be less people asking about a company car for their 12 hours.
Sure. That's what I mean. Well, I guess I always pictured it a little differently, more like you'd have like the, you know, like let's say you had a restaurant, like a pizza place, and it's called Ryan's Pizza, and I'd go buy 10, you know, Chevy whatevers or Honda Civics or whatever, and then I'll have my logo on there, and it'd be standardized, and that you just know that, kind of like UPS, you wouldn't be giving them out. They'd be like, you come in, oh, you're taking car number one, you're taking car number two, you know, kind of like a semi-truck fleet does. Anyways, that's a whole other thing. Let's get back to you. So how did you balance costs in your restaurant? You know, like you talked about one of the biggest problems you had was your actual labor costs. But what about food costs and, you know, rent, utilities? What in that aspect did you have control over, and what do you have to worry about?
Let's see here. So obviously had control over, you know, labor cost, food cost. Other than that, there were some, I guess we call them like incidental kind of items.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a new lid that fits properly for a grease trap. you know, there were certain things that, you know, I was in charge of, but as far as marketing and, you know, rent, utilities, those kinds of things, those were completely out of my hands. I did have a marginal, somewhat of a relationship with the landlord, and, you know, was able to talk to him, but it was never about, he wasn't sitting down to talk money with me.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as marketing is concerned, there were certain things that were implemented on a national level. You know, all those coupons that come on tops of your box and,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that. They give it to us just to, you know, making sure everybody's using all the materials they're putting out there. I.e. making sure that the marketing materials that corporate has used it hasn't gone to waste,
because
mm-hmm. they spent money on it too. But then there were also things that I could do myself, big time giving out donations and stuff like that. Now, that doesn't really cost the company anything at an initial level. But as soon as you start getting into some of the bigger stuff, it will.
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of into like my favorite questions now. We're kind of into towards the end of the interview. We're kind of, you know, we got a really good idea of what you do. So I got to ask you, what would happen in the world if there were no more general managers in restaurants?
That one's a tough one.
I mean, would all the owners have to run it? Would there be no restaurants? Could there be no investment groups? Or what do you think?
Well, in my opinion, if you get the owners to run it, they're just going to become the general manager, if you will.
Sure.
And anybody who's worked in food service that's listening here knows exactly the person I'm talking about. When I say something about Volume at that person says, "Oh, well, I can run this place." You know what I mean? I mean, we all know that person.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you for trying, but no, you cannot.
I remember one time when I was a delivery driver, there was this insider, and he's like, "How come they don't give me a chance at being a manager?" And my first thought is, I know exactly why. I'm not telling you. hate to sound like that, but...
Sure.
You know, and it's... I feel like it's not a difficult job, but I feel it needs to be done.
Okay.
And I don't know. I've also, you know, worked in retail with no semblance of a management team, mm-hmm. and there is nothing good to say about that.
So you think the structure is important? And the,
yeah, I mean it's.
Because we had, you know, the last two interviews, Bryn and Randall. Actually, you know, I asked them the next question, which is who's on your staff is indispensable. And they actually both said they're general managers. Like, first off, out the gate, that the general manager is the most important person. Because without them delegating and setting it up and having their back, they couldn't be as successful as they are. And would you say that was your experience as well?
In certain experiences with that. I've had good and bad GMs. I've had people that were there that got your back every single time, every single day. And then I've also had people that you won't see for weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it goes both ways.
Okay.
But I feel like, you know, that's with any job.
Okay. So... Who on your staff, I already asked the question, who on your staff is irreplaceable, indispensable? Like, you know, you could say it's one person or a position. You know, like, who could you not live without?
Like I said earlier, you find those, that right delivery driver that knows how to do everything for you inside, that knows exactly where to be and when to be doing it. You know, those kinds of people are completely indispensable. It's just hard to find that kind of person, in my opinion. And then I've also had, you know, other people that had, you know, with me worked their way up from delivery drivers to my assistant. One case in particular, and he was just, you know, he was just on it 100% of the time. You know the kind of person once you get them a bit.
I totally understand that. So, you know, we're at the end of our interview, so I got to ask. So what are your next steps? Are you going to stay in the restaurant industry? Are you going to keep going? Are you going to move on in your life? What are you thinking? Where are you at right now?
Personally, moving on. However, I've got a few reasons for leaving that are, a bit different. I guess my rise in particular in the restaurant industry was a bit of a tumultuous one. Going from delivery driver, having my car stolen on a delivery, to, you know, slowly moving my way up to being a general manager after breaking my shoulder and not being able to make pizzas anymore. Wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it's where I ended up.
Sure.
But that being said, with that shoulder injury, I've got certain things that I'm just sort of unable to do anymore. And that's just kind of a icing on the cake of feeling a little underappreciated and not really having enough time off.
Sure.
You know, certain things that we've touched on earlier.
Well, but just so you know, I appreciate you. And all of our listeners appreciate you too. So there you go. At least for this moment today, you can feel very appreciated. Well, Mr. Jeff Buck, thank you so much for being on The People Behind Your Food. Did you have fun?
That was great.
Good. So I just want to thank you again for being on The People Behind Your Food. And for those of you who are listening to this on Skype or Radio Public, on iTunes, or on Google Play Music, you can also catch the latest episodes on ChefRyanCallahan.com. I've got all kinds of cooking information. And if you visit me on Instagram, @Chef_Ryan_Callahan, let me tell you guys, I'm not hard to find. You just Google my name. I'm just pretty much everywhere. But you've already found me, so hey, it's great. So anyways, guys, next week we'll have Chris Gall on, who is a... he's an amateur, not an amateur chef, but he's a new chef. He just came out of culinary school, and I wanted to get a fresh, less salty perspective after after me and Jeff had our old men salty moments here. And so that's who we'll have next week. And again, this is Jeff Buck, and thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff. And I will see you guys next week.